Welcome to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. Outward Media is a trusted data partner to Fortune 2000 businesses and startups alike. We provide the highest quality audience data to fuel engaged, integrated, omnichannel campaigns. Our mission is to deliver real data, real results, and invaluable reach to real people. Hi, everyone. This is Paula Keoki, CEO of Outward Media. This is the Marketing Vanguard Leading Voices in B2B Innovation podcast. Today, we're fortunate to have Angelo Ponzi. His business is Kraft. He's a president, corporate founder, and a fractional CMO. Great to meet you and have you on the podcast, Angelo.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Good. And I did notice in your bio that you work with some pretty big brands, AT&T and Disney, and that's pretty substantial. We actually work with AT&T as well.
Okay. Yeah, I've been very fortunate to work with some global brands, some national brands, but I've also worked with startups with no money. So I've worked in a wide variety of situations. And all those experiences, of course, if you realize that you get to bring it to bear no matter where you're working, right? Each one has
their own challenges and ways they look at things. And the startup is totally different from the Fortune 2000, right?
Yes.
So, in your work, when you're developing go-to-market strategies, Angelo, how do you guide clients in building the right marketing foundation, especially around audience targeting and segmentation?
Yeah, great question. So I'm a firm believer, and I have been throughout most of my career, is you've got to take the time to look inward, understand your analytics, your data, but also to spend time understanding the market, the competition, your customers. And so in building these, I always, the goal is to get a client to do the research, take the time to go out into the marketplace. I see it all the time where decisions are made in the boardroom, if you will, without ever talking to anybody. Yeah. You know, hey, I've been doing this for 20 years. That's great. But when's the last time you talked to your customers? What? 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. The salespeople tell me, yeah, but no offense to salespeople, but it's a little filtered and biased.
I was going to say through their filter.
Through their filter. Yeah. And so to me, it's always get a independent person that has no skin in the game. That's just going to report on the facts. And it is, for me, it's fact-based. Part of my background is research. I've been doing the research side and the planning side pretty much my entire career. That was always my focus. And so I've learned over those years that you've got to get the input from the marketplace, from your customers. Why do they buy? Why don't they buy? Why do they make the decisions? How often? Who else are they using? How much market share do you have of their business? And companies tend to look at, hey, I've got a revenue stream. We're doing sales. Things are great. They're repeating. But now what are you? What do you know about them, really, truly know about them? And so that's where I really push companies to understand, to get out, go see somebody. I worked with a software company a few years ago. And one of the things I found during this process is they were getting ready to lose a couple of their key clients. Ooh. The only person they dealt with was, I think her name was Becky, the customer service person. They hadn't seen the CEO or the president of the company in 5-6 years.
Okay.
And the company itself had taken some of the work that they did in their custom software and created this foundational work that all their new clients were getting, but none of their old clients. And the old clients had no idea this stuff existed, which would have changed the way they thought about the organization. So after presenting my findings, my first and major recommendation was get out, do a roadshow, go meet all of these people and explain and talk to them. And they managed to curb the losses because now people understood. Now we're building a relationship. And senior managers, the question I always ask, how often does senior management actually engage with their clients? And typically they don't. Yeah. Yet it's important. Now, if you're a gazillion-dollar corporation, you probably don't. The CEO is probably not traveling around, but it's important.
Yeah, like the CEO of AT&T is probably not going to.
Yeah, he's probably not out there.
The fact that you uncovered that they were getting ready to lose two major clients, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I've seen it. Another example, it was a large HVAC company. and the kind of like LAX and the Bonaventure and stuff. If you live in California, those make sense. And one of the things we found out is they were right. Their customers love them. However, most of the people they were dealing with were within 2 to 5 years of retiring.
Oh, wow.
The new generation of engineers actually didn't particularly like them.
Oh, wow.
They didn't have any environmentally friendly products. Their competitors were doing these kind of package deals and giving them greater discounts. And so this new generation was getting ready to become the primary customers, yet they didn't have a relationship with this client. And so that was one of the big findings is you've got to do some educational programs. You've got to get these people on your side. And this idea that the younger generation will go to the older generation and ask questions, and that's how you'll maintain. Well, once they're gone, there's nobody to go to. They're making their own decisions. And so that was another, again, just major discovery, which made them change the way they educate. And then also they started bringing on products that were meeting the needs of this new generation.
Generation, yeah. That's very valuable. So your premise is you start with that research background in the beginning, identify good and bad potentially, and then once you establish all that, what type of strategies do you look to create from it? I know you mentioned integrated marketing on your bio for omni-channel marketing. What's your next step from there?
Yeah, so ultimately we do the due diligence, we gather these insights, and part of that's also the competitors and trying to understand how they're marketing, what's their messaging, where are their strengths, where are their weaknesses, and putting this together to figure out that customer-centric messaging that's relevant to those customers. And I'm sure you've seen this. A lot of companies, they're very, look at us, we've been around for 25 years and we got all these great people. And it's, okay, there's a reason to believe, not a reason to buy. And so to get them to understand that the rational elements of your business are not making that emotional connection. And so what's in it for me? What's the value prop? Why, if I work with you, how's it going to make my life easier? Basically, the old saying, if you buy IBM, you won't get fired if you buy IBM. Of
Right.
course,
I remember.
that's probably dating me a little bit, but
I remember.
but and part of that discovery is how do you discover and consume information? Now, if these older engineers, for example, I was talking about, when I asked the question, how do you consume? That's how we like to read white papers and stuff like that. I haven't written a white paper and I can't even tell you how long. And so by knowing how they consume, what types of information they're looking for can help set up the strategy for implementation from an integrated standpoint, right? If I'm going to do a blog or if I'm going to do a video or I'm going to do a podcast or I'm going to do a television commercial, whatever it happens to be. Now you can start to look at what are those channels that you're going to use, and then how do you best use those channels, ensuring that the messaging, the brand is being communicated across all of them, which I think sometimes gets lost as they go into different channels. They start to lose the fact that everything needs to stay interconnected, that every piece of communication has got to be reinforcing the brand somehow, some way. And I think that gets lost
I agree with you. The bigger the
in the
company, the bigger that issue is too.
Exactly. And then, as we had mentioned a little bit earlier before we started this, you start using outside resources and you have multiple agencies or multiple consultants that you're turning to. And if you're not strong in your organization to ensure that's happening, it's too easy for it to get out of control. And then at the end of the day, potentially, if they're saying they're using me, all that work that we just did, but somebody else is doing the implementation, is you might as well not spend the money.
Oh, that's the
And
point.
unfortunately, I've seen that happen over the last 11 years.
Have you noticed, like, latest research I read was that like 72% of the B2B buyers now are millennial? Have you noticed any change in terms of the communication to that cohort versus Gen X or?
Yeah, I think it's, have I seen a specific communications? No, but and that's partially due to some of the clients that I have. But it gets back to that idea of relevancy, understanding how a millennial or a Gen X and how they approach business, how they think, what they're looking for versus somebody from a boomer generation that's going to be different. And so it's behavior, and understanding what that behavior is and how to, impact it, right? Whether we're trying to change an attitude or whether build awareness or again, try to change their motivation for purchasing, all those come from those insights of having conversations. And guessing, is
Yeah.
hope is not a strategy.
No, hope is not a strategy. One of the things that we did this year was we matched all our B2B data to their consumer attributes, residential address, and alternate emails to be able to do facilitate the online programmatic and LinkedIn strategies, meta strategies. And one of our clients told us that their intention was to use that data to put them in the different, whether they're millennial, Gen X, as you said, boomer, and then tailor that messaging that way based on having that information. So that's kind of something the data compilers have started doing in the last couple of years. Have you seen that or?
Yeah, customer segmentation, it takes time, and I find sometimes I always say find sometimes because I don't like to make these broad assumptions, but it's yeah, we need let's engage. And by the way, I need to be out in the market with this new campaign in 2 weeks. That's you can, but it's going to be garbage because you don't take the time. And so segmentation, there's so many different variables you can segment on. And to your point, whether it's Gen X or millennials or boomers, whatever it happens to be, or Gen Z, is understanding and doing the research to understand the nuances within those in those verticals, if you will. Then how is there any gap or any there's is there anything that's horizontal that might fit across all of those, or are we dealing with these segmentations? And a one size fits all, there's no silver bullet in what we do. And so you have to determine where you're marketing, who you're marketing to, and what's the messages. Sometimes it might be the same five bullet points, but it's a different priority where the emphasis happens to be. I go back thinking this a while ago, we worked on Simple Green.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And when it went from more of an industrial product to a household consumer product, I was involved in that transition. And we did a lot of research and we had these kind of five priorities. And in one of them, that we heard from the research was, yeah, I'd be willing to pay more for that because it keeps my kids safe. I don't have to worry about them drinking it or have all these problems. Then the reality came, and all of a sudden, as it's standing next to 409, and I'm making this up, $1.29 more. All of a
Right.
sudden, it was like, yeah, I'll just lock it up so my kid doesn't drink it. And now price became an issue.
Okay.
Another thing we found is we had to go back and readjust our messaging. And then we were in areas like in Florida, and we were talking about how to use it for washing clothes or mopping floors. And we would demonstrate, but we were noticing in certain, especially in the some of the heavier different Hispanics, Texas and Florida and things like that, and different backgrounds or nationalities, right? Just not the Hispanics as a whole, but is we were trying to tell them how to mop, if you will. Yet culturally, we weren't actually in tune with them. So sales were not doing what we thought they would do and went back in and did more research to find that we were off in the way we were using visuals and the way we communicated. And so it gets back to not only within kind of those generational gaps, but also that kind of a cultural gap that you also have to dig into, again, consumer products and things like that. So all that work takes time. Like to tell clients, don't be in a hurry to spend money on something you have no idea. Just by throwing it out there doesn't mean it's going to work. And so by really understanding what's going on in your marketplace with your customers, with your prospects, competition, you can design something that is more relevant and moves the needle in the way you want it moved.
Do you, in working with your clients, do you guys incorporate the intent-based data?
And some of them, we've been looking at that more, especially on the B2B side, and some of the products that we're marketing using intent from a couple of the services to try to get some insights. But yes, we've been using that more and more, and I'd like to use it more. But
Do you see it moving the needle from your perspective?
not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
We tested with a large e-commerce provider for B2B. We tested just straight no intent overlay, and then we put the intent overlay on it. And in this particular instance, it was an email marketing campaign. double the open and click rate to use the intent data. Yeah. So we actually use that almost all our campaigns now.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, we can chat about that. So with your clients, do you get involved? Do they worry about data privacy? Do they talk to you about that at all when you're looking at creating programs for them?
Just if there's, in a lot of the stuff that we do, we're not really, you know, we're just protecting their client list and things like that, worrying about GDPR, whether we're going internationally, but we're not using it in the sense of using it for building AI or anything that puts the data out there. So we're just pretty sensitive to protecting the lists and things.
And that's their own in-house list, right?
Their own in-house. And we're, as we get new lists or we're building lists, we're protective of that. But that's, I'm not having really to worry about their IT data or anything like that at this point in time.
So if you're looking ahead in your crystal ball, what trends or innovations do you believe will define successful B2B marketing strategies over the next 2 years? I think you hit on one already. AI.
AI, that's where I was going to go. So it's interesting. I just prior to this podcast, I'm working on an AI presentation. I have two of them in the next 2 weeks. And AI, and I've spent the last 6 or 7 months working on an AI client. And the thing that pops up, first of all, AI is here and it's here to stay, and how it evolves and matures is yet to be seen.
Yeah, I agree.
It's confusing to the kind of the general market because there's so many, there's thousands and thousands of applications that are happening every day. They're being either built in, or there's tools out there that allows you to build your own. This was funny. A little over a year ago, we did an AI presentation, and it was like, we did a survey of about 50 people in this networking group, and we said, what AI tools have you used? And the majority, and probably only 50, 55% had used ChatGPT, and pretty much nobody else. And here we are a little over a year later, where the same people are doing another AI presentation. And we're like, we can't even reference that one that we did because it's all changed.
Yeah.
And now we're talking with agents and autonomous and decentralized bot-to-bot communications that are really thinking and acting on your behalf. It's going to be really interesting. And just the tools that can impact what we do in marketing and from an information gathering standpoint. Now, I still believe in human intervention. It's not there yet. And I tell people, just don't go use ChatGPT and think it solved your problem. Right. Probably didn't. Might help you gather some insights to figure it out, but definitely
there's an error factor.
The hallucinations. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that from our standpoint in marketing, it's going to get more resilient. Mm-hmm. If we look at this chart, this graph I have, this pyramid, and we're down in the ChatGPTs, and now you're down to, as you start to move up into centralized and decentralized communications, where these, you can train the bot. So this client that I was talking about, they have a client in the physical therapy, for example. And so they have a bot that actually joins the physical therapist on the intake and listens and writes up all the notes and populates all the paperwork. We have one that is in the addiction space, where they'll, like, the client will work with the gambling folks or alcohol folks. And this bot becomes like the therapist, the first line therapist, if you need somebody in the middle of the night. Wow. And so it's been trained to be a therapist, and it can actually go out and take the test to be certified. Mm-hmm. Same thing in some of the financial and banking world. So it's here.
Oh yeah.
And some of that's very sophisticated and it takes time, but yeah, it's going to be everywhere.
I think it's going to explode. I think I saw Bill Gates said over the weekend that doctors won't be necessary in 10 years. I disagree with that. Who's going
to? Yeah, but, no, I would disagree with that.
Yeah, but I thought, wow, okay. So you talk to the bot, and who does the surgery? The robot?
Yeah, yeah. The robot. Yeah, exactly. If you think about it, if you're somebody goes to school and gets training, and you're sending you're training the brain of your agent, you know, it's the same, and you're constantly feeding it in the knowledge base, and you're protecting that. Probably the biggest thing I've seen, especially in the AI world, is the data security. Is where does your data live? Is it on your personal computers or in the cloud? How do you protect it? And certainly, like, people go on to ChatGPT and they throw their stuff in there and tell it to go do stuff. They just basically put it out to the universe. Now, you can flick a switch in there to stop that, but most people don't.
Yeah.
And so I think that data protection issue becomes really huge, especially now in the AI world. But I just, yeah, it's, they're really cool. I've done some great art. I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, but all of a sudden I'm an artist using some of these tools. So it's been fun, but how they get applied and the applications that exist will be an interesting evolution. An interesting one for you, because in the marketing space, is the question I get, and I'm sure you get, is about attribution. How do you work? How do you judge whether the campaign was effective? And we can usually find out first touch, sometimes last, right? But a lot of the attribution models are, I have found over the years, are just not as good as we would like them to be. But I think AI is going to get pretty close and starting to define that. And I've seen some examples in a inventory management program where the developer actually tied in not only inventory, but profitability of the product, and he can tie it back to campaigns. And he's testing these new attribution models in there. And that was really cool and really interesting. It's not there yet, but he's headed that way. And that will be pretty fascinating if you could say, Mr. B2B, I can not only move your product, I can look at the profitability and I can tell you which campaign we should be using to drive those profitabilities. Why? Because we've got the data.
I think we're heading there.
Yeah, sure. I think we're getting really close.
So, Angelo, this has been great chatting with you today. How does somebody get a hold of you if they want to talk about doing the research ahead of time and planning their strategy?
Sure. The easiest way would be to just connect with me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Everything's connected. My website and all of that kind of stuff is connected through LinkedIn. That's the easiest way to do it.
Okay. So that would be Angelo Ponzi, P-O-N-Z-I.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time today. This was great.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Hi, I'm Paula Keoki, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media, and don't forget to rate or review the podcast wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and inspire others. If you're a successful business leader or marketing professional with insights to share, we'd love to feature you as a guest. Visit outwardmedia.com/podcast to learn more. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and connect with us on social media to join the conversation. Visit outwardmedia.com to explore how we can help take your strategic audience building to the next level. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.